The TNT Shop has great gift ideas for your furry family member. And we don't mean your Aunt Dolores.
You stink!
The TNT Shop has it all. At TNTRadio.live. Anything worth saying is worth talking about. Deprogram with Michael Parker on today's News Talk Radio, TNT.
All righty, folks. It is hour two of Deprogram. I'm your host, Michael Parker. And in this hour, we're going to be joined in just a little bit by Charlie Robinson from Macro Aggressions. He was on last week. We were talking about the tabletop exercises. Over the weekend, it was announced that there was recently another one by the usual suspects. And again, it was a John Hopkins, Bill and Melinda Gates freak show. And this one, I believe, was in Belgium in October. So we will talk about that. We will also be talking about these journalists who have passed away at the World Cup. And John Matlin's also got a story for us. He'll be here in a minute. But before all of that, Seth Rich, the late Seth Rich, that story is back in the news. Apparently, the FBI is now saying that it's got some more information. And it has a computer, a laptop, and it has some papers related to it that has never been announced. This happened as a result, supposedly, of a search they were doing for his computers, and they found these documents related to it. So there's two laptops. There was Seth Rich's work laptop and his personal laptop. And I think in the past they did have his personal laptop, but now they also have his work laptop. And if you remember, what happened was back in July of 2016, Seth Rich was gunned down in the early hours near his home in Washington. And it was very, very suspicious. Authorities were trying to claim, this was a tragic crime. It was a robbery that went wrong, but all of his belongings were there, his wallet, I think his watch, et cetera. It was super suspicious. Journalist Cy Hirsch had said that he had been told by a source within the FBI that Seth Rich had showed a DNC staffer had relayed DNC documents to WikiLeaks and inferred that that was Seth Rich. And later Julian Assange would hint at that was what happened. And I think, and I personally think that is what happened. And now we're finding out that they've got additional hardware and things that they could be doing forensics on. And this just, I guess, was announced in federal court on the 9th. So that was Friday. It said the FBI's records located a report while searching for the work computer. And this person, Michael Seidel, who was the chief of this particular office department, said in a sworn declaration that this had happened on December 9th. He described a document that went along with this that was 3 pages, and it was a forensic report detailing actions performed by some third party outside entity to image the work laptop. So this is getting curiouser and curiouser. And of course, the FBI, they don't want to have to produce this information. They are actually asking a court to keep these new records. I don't know if they mean the computer and the documents or both, shielded from one Brian Huddleston, who is a Texas resident, who had filed a lawsuit against the FBI over ignoring a Freedom of Information request for records on Seth Rich previously. And so there's a U.S. District Judge, Amos Mazant, who is, of course, an Obama appointee, who's overseeing this case. And we're waiting to see how this person is going to rule in regards to these new reports and the hardware. So the Seth Rich case is back in the news, and it's one of those things that I think we always knew that it was what we suspected, that Seth Rich gave information to WikiLeaks. It wasn't a Russian hack. And there was a member, I think it was William Binney, I think was the man's name, who was former NSA. He provided pretty good evidence that showed that the speed of the data transfer onto a thumb drive seemed to exceed the transfer speeds that would have been used, I think, to get the information in another way. So we'll have to go back and revisit that. But Seth Rich, always in the back of our minds, and we're not going to forget it. And as more information comes forth on this, I will make sure to continue to bring that to you, because it ain't going away anytime soon. At TNT Radio, we never go home. We are committed to bringing you our take on the biggest topics of our time. We broadcast live 24/7 online globally. No matter what, we got you covered here on TNT Radio.
Going beyond the headlines.
They break down the big story.
Today's News Talk Radio, TNT.
With year's end approaching rapidly, that means we are entering tax season. Boo hiss. What new rules do we have to look forward to? Here to discuss it is TNT News producer John Madlin.
One, two, the IRS is coming for you. Three, four, better report your Venmo transactions and more. So yeah, that's right. The tax season is approaching. We all heard about the 87,000 IRS agents they want to hire and train to use deadly force. Well, maybe this is one reason why. Online money making can create a new avenue for shock and awe for the common tax-paying man. The IRS is now requiring Americans to report transactions of $600 or more on their PayPals, Venmos, Cash Apps, and whatnot. The third-party processors will now report a user business transaction if they exceed $600 a year, whereas previously they would send users a 1099-K if their gross income exceeded $20,000 a year or 200 separate transactions in that same year period. Some people that haven't been paying attention will be surprised when they get these documents. A change made with all Democrat votes in the past American Rescue Plan, something no Republicans voted for. One may assume the next step is IRS weekly visits and then perhaps an adopt an IRS agent program where one lives with you. Obviously, that part's a joke, but the fact that a single transaction of $600 will have you issued this tax document form, well, that's the cold hard truth. This will apply to selling goods on the marketplaces, throughout the internet, and more. According to Pew Research Center, one out of every four Americans makes extra income on the side by online sales. Payments received for goods and services are the ones that fall under the new rule. Payments for gifts, reimbursement for food, and such are excluded. Also, sales of personal items at a loss are not taxable. Going to be an interesting tax season, Michael. If you don't have an accountant, it may be time to get one. What are your thoughts?
Well, luckily for me, my wife is an accountant, and the last several years we've done our taxes ourselves. We probably might be able to get a better deal if we actually hired some super savvy accountant, but she and I knock it out. The $600 rule, now I was aware of that because, I'm one of those one in four Americans who sold things online, and I have like a lot of old memorabilia, music-related stuff that I've sold, and clearly I didn't sell very much because I don't think I ever exceeded that $600 in a single year thing. But I thought that that already exists. Are you saying that now that they're just automatically going to send you this this notification prior to filing?
Correct. So just like you're waiting for your interest statements from the bank, these things will probably be coming to your email. I'm assuming that's how that works because everything has gone digital. But these tax documents will be made available. And now the IRS will be able to access this and cross-reference them with what you're reporting, whereas that was not the case unless you exceeded $20,000 or 200 separate transactions in a year. Now, if you were to undergo an audit, they still would be seeing these transactions coming in and out of your bank. That would be what I assume, because that's where people load this onto you, load it onto your checking account or something along that nature. The best situation in this is make sure you actually file your taxes accurately. I'm a sucker for that. I always file my taxes as accurate as possible. I don't try to figure out any other way around it. I'm just like, take my money so you don't have to deal with me because I don't want to deal with you. Now, there's people that don't do that. And the IRS is not easy to navigate. Even if you have questions, it's a day-long process. And I had... I took on the idea of running a campaign as the treasurer. So not only was I the candidate, I was the custodian of records and treasurer. And man, Michael, I can tell you, I can keep really good records and I can figure out a lot of good things. So I figured out the FEC software. I have every penny accounted for. I should be hired as an accountant. I would never do it though. However, when it comes to the IRS end, they don't answer questions. So when you, I had a misunderstanding and I did not file something on time because I thought I only had to file it at the half year mark. So I filed it some odd days late and I got penalized $801 and change. Now that's on the campaign. Now with that, I was trying to call and figure out what is needed. It took me over a month and a half to get them on the phone because every time I called, they said, we're too busy. Try another day, not later. Try another day, like a whole nother calendar day. And I kept getting that, couldn't get in touch with them, sent out requests for relief, sent it overnight, mailed, had it signed for the whole nine. And I can tell you this, that when I finally got them on the phone, what they told me was jaw-dropping. They actually said to me, there's a note on your account that we can't answer the question that you just asked. When I simply asked, how did you determine that I owed this much in penalty? And they would not tell me. So the sheet that instructed me to call them says to call them for help. But you don't actually get help all the time when you call, and it's almost impossible to get in touch with them. So it's a very sticky situation when you have questions for the IRS, and I hope that the 87,000 agents that they hire answer phones and actually apply the idea of helping somebody as opposed to terminating them.
Yes, because they are supposedly going to, some of them will at least be allowed to carry guns. That's part of their job description, apparently, which I don't fully understand, but one thing about the $600 is I think the way they left it in the past was, you know, you need, if you exceeded that $600 threshold, you then, it was on you to report it. Okay, so that makes sense. But now they're just going to know how much you have. And another thing that I was reading about the sticker shock that might come with income taxes this year is because some of these programs from the COVID issues are running out. So some people that might have gotten particular tax credits before, they're not going to get them this year, or it's going to be far less than what they expected. So they were also saying that people might be surprised with that as well.
Yeah, there's going to be surprises all over the place when you put a new document in like this, and specifically what we've experienced in the past 2 years, and people with their jobs, or like you're saying, with whatever programs did exist that they got relief from, that's gone, or if they have to pay back something now that they weren't aware of. Yeah, tax season's always a pain in the old butt. It's just that when you had the 600 before, I'm under the assumption, you know, you could have skirted by. So, I mean, it's the same thing with waiters and waitresses that get cash tips. They can report, they have to report a certain amount. So this is where we're at though. This is now, they're in your account with you the whole time. And that's really what this comes down to. So this is something that you can't have plausible deniability. They have access to it. And at the end, this comes down to making changes in the way you vote. If you don't like that and you think that somebody should not be able to access every single thing you do, maybe you should vote better. That's the only thing I could say. No Republicans voted for this. And it's definitely viewed as an overstep in where the government can go. But at this rate, that's why I made that joke that it's there is no boundaries. So I wouldn't be surprised if they start doing some home visits. And now there's something very interesting. I have a friend that's an accountant, and he said that one of his clients actually answered the door, and there were three IRS accountants, I guess, agents, IRS agents at the door. And they said that they were doing some sort of audit because there was an underreporting and they wanted his documents. And the guy was like, I don't just have all my documents on me. And they were like, great, you have 72 hours and we'll be back at the same time. So if that story is in fact true, they can start freezing things. They can start showing up to your home and they can start harassing you. So I urge everybody to account properly during the major IRS invasion of privacy times. Be ready to answer those questions, because there's nothing better than having all the answers as a knockout punch.
John, there's 87,000 new ones, so they're going to have to do something. So I think you may be unfortunately onto something, and I hope that they don't show up at my store, at my door, because when I was just imagining like Men in Black or Matrix-like malevolent figures wanting my tax results, which,
yeah,
I don't like that.
Yeah. And that's what the account said. He was, if someone knocks on your door, do not open it, because you don't know what's coming next and they don't give you time to prepare. If you can tell their IRS, just don't open the door. Let them actually communicate with you, like send you a subpoena, something, because if they engage with you, then they're going to start asking and demanding things. And it's just a very hairy situation to find yourself in. So make sure your accounting is definitely on the mark, because this is definitely something they're going to explore. They're adding those agents. This is the new rule set. And they think they're going to pass go and collect a lot of money this year. And if you make a mistake, they will come for you.
Holy cow. John Matlin, thank you for that report. I'm thoroughly unsettled now, but we will catch you tomorrow. So thank you so much. You guys, we're going to take a break. When we come back, Charlie Robinson is going to join us, and we are going to have fun like we did last week. And we're going to talk about all the incessant insanity that just continues. We'll be back.
You should hear what Darren Denslow is talking about.
It looks like the Just Oil, Extinction Rebellion. There's even some Extinction Animal or Animal Extinction Group now that I noticed that was being reported upon yesterday. These groups, their protests or some of the activities from their protests have been considered illegal. And the words or the term that's being used by Rishi Sunak is that they are illegal protests. Now, I'm not sure if we can have illegal protests here in the UK. We're a democratic society. I thought part of that democracy was that we were allowed to protest as long as we weren't breaking any laws. There are already in laws in place to prevent people from blocking the roads or damaging property or graffiti or any of these other types of ridiculous activities that the, you know, Just for Oil, for example, have been carrying out. So we need to be careful what we wish for with these environmentalists and the similar lefty activists who protest, because they may get us all prevented from dissenting and speaking out against the decisions and policies of what can only be described as tyrannical governments around the world.
Digging deeper with D.D. Denslow on today's News Talk Radio, TNT.
I view Al Sharpton as a poverty pimp.
Terrorism from white supremacy is the most lethal threat to the homeland.
I walk outside every day in fear of white supremacy right here in the middle of the hood. Okay, yeah, right.
My grandparents had a cross burned on their property. We were slaves in the past. We're free now.
I never seen a white supremacist in my life. Never, and they can't point to one. Where the hell are they? I wish somebody would introduce me to a white supremacist. I would like to talk to them and take pictures with them, because I never seen one in my life.
Biden says that the country is systematically racist. You know, I almost want to look at him and say, haven't you been the system for the last 50 years?
He's the one that sponsored the 1994 crime bill, which unequivocally basically targeted black men in black neighborhoods.
The polarization, the left versus right, the black versus white.
Pro-choice against pro-life.
I work for Black Lives Matter. I'm sorry that I scared you.
People have had to make it like they're apologizing for their whiteness.
And could you just please apologize for, you know, for your white privilege?
What's more disheartening to me is that those who are within the black community are allowing for that to take place.
So really what we're dealing with is a cultural Marxism that Joe Biden and all the rest from the left we're trying to inculcate into our society.
Well, you were once the oppressor, so now I must be the oppressor. You don't avenge evil for evil.
It's okay to say disparaging things against white people. Our former president, Barack Obama, said it, you know, about old white men are a problem, except when it comes time for him to fly around on their airplanes and ride around on their yachts or be their next door neighbors or endorse them for president like Joe Biden. Then old white men are okay. This is their last gasp.
What do progressive socialists really want?
Watch Systematic Deception at SalemNow.com.
Don't think you're the one losing your mind.
And I don't know how many commercials.
see, 3 out of 5 have mixed race couples in them. That's not by accident. They're selling soap, man.
We can't believe it, but we cover it.
This is today's News Talk Radio, TNT.
Ladies and gentlemen, I am so old that I saw Randy Rhoads play with Ozzy Osbourne a month before he went down in that airplane in Dallas, Texas. And I got to tell you, it was glorious. Yes, I used to get my medal on. So this hour, we are joined by Charlie Robinson. We had a lot of fun last week, and we were talking about tabletop exercises. And over the weekend, another one gets announced that has just happened. So we're going to be talking about that. Charlie Robinson is the author of The Octopus of Global Control, a controversial and humorous book that takes quotes from 500 witnesses to some of history's greatest events. He's also the co-author of the number one best-selling book, The Controlled Demolition of the American Empire. He co-wrote that with Jeff Berwick from Dollar Vigilante. And he's the hardest working man in podcasting. He's also got a podcast called Macro Aggressions, and he is also part of the Union of the Unwanted podcast. And he's right here with us today on Deprogram on a Monday. Welcome, brother. How you doing?
Fantastic. Thanks for having me back. We had so much fun last week. We decided to do it again.
We did. And it's funny because we were talking about the tabletop exercises and it was on my mind. And then I'll be damned. Over the weekend, we find out that there was another one in October, the same usual suspects, John Hopkins University, Bill and Melinda Gates. This one, I think they did in Belgium, I believe. Anyway, it was in October, and this one is about some kind of enterovirus breaking out in a Latin American country.
Yeah, boy. Well, I'm sure it's going to be just another humongous coincidence when this happens in real life, exactly as they role played it. That nothing to see here. Just the just Thomas Inglesby. Anytime you see that guy involved in a tabletop exercise, get ready. I would say listen to what these guys are talking about. I mean, we goof on it. We say, oh, there they go again. Yeah. But really pay attention to what they're saying, you know, in these fictional scenarios, because as they have proven to us, it's not even so much that we have proven it, but they keep showing us that these things turn out to happen in real life. And maybe not every single last detail, but there are enough similarities and sometimes just outright, just like as an example, the Twitter hashtag that they used in the fictional scenario, hashtag vaccines work in the SPARS pandemic. That exact Twitter hashtag came out and was used in real life. And it was used also by rappers, which was what they were using it in the fictional scenario. It wound up happening in real life. So you know, we can goof on these guys and we should mock them and because they're ridiculous people, but we should also be listening to what they say because they're giving us a little bit of a entry into what might be coming our way. So pays to pay attention.
I was listening to my friend Peter Duke and George Webb last night, both of whom have been on the show, and they were talking about this last night. And I mean, they were taking it very seriously, and they're like you and I, kind of goofing on it, but we do it just because it's so horrifyingly relevant, and we're concerned that, you know, this is them showing their hand again. But this did just happen in October, and In Peter and George's interview, they were very surprised that this had happened, especially alongside the ongoing World Cup situation. And now we've got two journalists who come down ill. Well, they pass away very mysteriously related to the World Cup. And what do you think about that?
Yeah, that was tough. I'm a soccer player myself, played soccer in college. My high school soccer coach was on the USA World Cup team back in the 90s, you know, so I've always been watching this, paying attention to this. Remembered earlier in the first round of the World Cup, the controversy about the t-shirt he was trying to wear in as a reporter to cover, you know, it was a USA World Cup t-shirt, but it had a big rainbow on it, you know, and they said, well, you can't come in with that. You have to change that. And that was seen as the sort of authoritarian state of Qatar saying, you know, we don't do this here. And then we in America are supposed to be outraged by this. And that took up a lot of the oxygen
Yes.
And then he dropped dead.
Right. And everyone went, whoa. So there's two lines of thinking from this. You can put your little tinfoil hat on and go a couple different directions. The first direction that people started talking about was maybe the government got him, you know,
right.
maybe they silenced him, you know, I love a good conspiracy. I write about them for sure. But that didn't seem reasonable to me. I mean, talk about making yourself like making it really obvious, you know,
yeah.
But also how, I'm not sure exactly how they were to have done this, because apparently he went into full cardiac arrest at the stadium during the game and was given CPR. That's not exactly what, I mean, maybe we could talk about that 1975 heart attack gun that they rolled out at the church committee hearings, right? Maybe we could talk about that. So it's possible, I guess. But yeah. I think, you know, what's more likely is when you dig around into his background and you take a look at his wife's background. He was very vocal about his pro-vaccine stance, and that's fine. You can feel however you, I mean, you're supposed to at least be able to feel however you want to about vaccination right. These days. Maybe that's not exactly the case, but he's pro-vaccine. I respect his right to be pro-vaccine. That's fine. His wife, though, his wife is a doctor, and his wife is deeply involved with the Bill and Melinda Gates Foundation too, had ties to them and has worked and is a very vocal supporter of vaccines.
Charlie, let's hold on just a second. I got to take my quick bottom of the hour news break, but we're going to return to this because it gets weirder after this. I speak with Charlie Robinson. This is TNT's Deprogram. Going to give you some news and we'll be right back.
Question.
Huh? What are you guys doing today?
The news.
TNT Radio News.
Sounds good.
This is James O'Neill with a check of today's headlines. A vice president of the European Parliament, Eva Kaili, has been arrested by Belgian police in connection with an investigation into corruption that implicates World Cup host Qatar. The U.S. has taken into custody the person suspected of making the bomb that blew up Pan Am Flight 103 as it flew over Lockerbie, Scotland in 1988. British archaeologists are hailing the discovery of a necklace thought to be 1,300 years old.
Are you enjoying listening to TNT Radio?
Do you think we're doing a good job?
Then please let us know. Why not leave us a like or a positive review or comment on Facebook, Gab, or Getter? Help us get the word out as we cover the biggest topics of our time on today's news talk, TNT Radio.
All righty, True Seekers. Charlie Robinson is my guest this hour, and he is the author of The Octopus of Global Control. He is the co-author of The Controlled Demolition of the American Empire, and he is the host of the Macro Aggressions podcast. Right before we went to the break, we were talking about the journalist. Yeah, the rainbow shirt, okay. But I don't think that he was killed in that. I don't think he was killed over a rainbow shirt. And I mean, he was already having respiratory issues for a few days.
Right. Grant Wall is the reporter we're speaking about. He's an American journalist, covers soccer, has been for a very long time. He was apparently, you know, once this happens, people go back through their social media history. They say, well, what was going on there? And apparently he was experiencing respiratory issues in the lead up to it. It had been hitting him rather hard, and this was it culminated in him dying during the game. It was you know, died suddenly, you know, and you hate to jump to conclusions, and of course, right. You know, we do so at our own peril, so I'll try to be as measured about this as I can and just say that, you know, maybe an autopsy needs to be performed and to see what really happened. But you know, especially in that sport, just in particular, we have seen too many young athletes drop dead just in a sport. Let's be honest, soccer, and as someone that played it at the college level, you're used to running is nothing. It's no big deal. I remember days where I would show up to soccer practice and they would say, and there would be no soccer balls out there. So there's no balls today. Just have your running shoes. We're just running for a couple hours.
Wow.
And that's all it would be. So you would get cardiovascular wise, you'd be ready for this. You'd be up to it. And again, I worked with professional athletes with my media training company. And there's something that I think goes unreported with all of this with regard to these athletes. That is, every beginning of every season, they're put through a battery of tests to be medically cleared. They do that for a variety of reasons. Insurance is one of them. For sure, you have to make sure that the guys are healthy. Also, contractually, you know, if you have a guy that's on your team that's on a multi-million dollar contract and you find a heart irregularity during one of his, when you're getting him tested out in the beginning of the season, that could invalidate or cause problems with the contract. So there's a lot of reasons why these guys go through testing. So they're tested every year and everything's fine. And now we start to see over 100. I mean, I've got the list of professional athletes that have dropped dead from over the last 18 months. And the last time I looked at the list, it was over 500 people. Okay. Yeah. So this is not accidental. This is, there's something here. So the question is, what is that something? What is that mysterious thing that was mandated that everybody had to take before they were allowed to get back on the field or get on an airplane or go through customs or whatever? So when you put all these things together and you, of course, we have the, I guess benefit might be the wrong word to use, but the benefit of watching this happen because it's a televised event. When you see guys falling over on their face in the middle of a game, and you've been watching soccer or football, however you want to refer to it, for your entire life, and you go, I've never seen this ever.
Right.
And now it's happening, not just on the field, but in the stands. We're having to stop the games because there's heart attacks of fans in the stands. That never happened before. So again, was he whacked by a rogue faction of the Qatari government? I mean, maybe, but I really doubt that. And I believe all kinds of things that are unusual. I don't believe that. I think that it is very possible that his death was the result of the vaccines. And I think that it makes it even more catastrophic because he's part of, you know, with his family, they are actively promoting the vaccines and basically talking down to anybody that doesn't take them too, on top of that, which is rude.
And I think that I read, and I don't know if this is exaggeration or not, is he was not only vaccinated, but I think he was quadruple vaccinated.
I would imagine so, though I'm speculating on that. But I would imagine when your wife is as... When your wife is in, not just in the industry, but a prominent player in the industry, and we're talking about promoting it, and we're talking about, you know, listen, they believe it, you know? So I'm not saying they are. I mean, what I think what would probably be worse in a situation, well, nothing's worse than him dying, but would be second worst would be if he was talking about it and shaming people into it, but then not doing it himself, you know, and being a gigantic hypocrite. At least, you know, that he believed in it and he thought it was the answer to get, you know, getting people healthy. And look, I just came at this from, I knew about this well in advance pre-COVID. So I was always very skeptical of the vaccines, but I think for a lot of people, this is a wake-up call.
I think so too. And so now let's throw a wrinkle in the mix. So now the second journalist who was, I believe, a videographer or a camera person, Khalid Al-Mislam, he passes away 48 hours later. And I cannot verify what I'm about to say other than I read it. But somebody was saying that they thought that he was a person who was not vaccinated. Now, this is two people at the World Cup, which is, there's a whole lot of people there. This could just be coincidence. But it is strange that they're both journalists. I don't think that either one of them were killed intentionally. I'm with you. I don't think they killed the man because of his t-shirt. I think that's, even though his brother did say, hey, I'm his brother, I'm gay, that I'm why he wore the t-shirt, and I feel sorry for his brother and his family, but I don't think that they offed him for that. This other person, the Khalid guy, though, I don't know what the story is on this person, but he suddenly died as well.
Yeah. And to be fair, listen, my dad suddenly died when I was a kid at 46 years old out jogging. So it does happen. I don't want to pretend like it doesn't, that natural causes can't get you. And hopefully with regard to the other gentleman that passed away there, it was natural causes. I don't like the idea of the vaccines killing. I don't like this because we talked last week about SPARS pandemic document and how they're, you know, creating these tabletop exercises and projecting out millions and millions of deaths and that, you know, the causes of it, you know, the vaccines play a huge role in this. I don't like to think about it, but again, I can't pretend like it's not a gigantic coincidence at the very least. And
100%.
And on top of that, it's the way that you're not allowed to even talk about it. which makes it even more suspicious to me. Of course, I'm not surprised that they're doing this. I fully expected them to clamp down on anybody being critical of it. But again, this is not the actions that you take when you are making a product that is just, honestly, we don't know what's going wrong. Please investigate, find out, help us find out what's wrong with our product. You know, if you're open about that, you invite investigate. Hey, let's talk about this. Let's figure it out. I don't want anyone else to get it. But instead, it's no. You're not allowed to talk about that. If you do, you're a crazy person, and you shouldn't be trusted. So we've gone through 2 years of them gaslighting us on this, and I think it's time for us to be honest about what we're seeing and what we're, and look, if these guys died from natural causes, I hope that is accounted for. And I hope people, and I hope they talk, you know, I hope the record comes out and says, this is what happened. But if it was vaccine related, and if they're pulling 3 foot long blood clots out of these guys, then we need to talk about that as well, because it impacts everybody.
For sure. And if anybody else passes away in the next day or two or three, then it's going to get really weird. But you reminded me about the soccer players, because originally, a couple of years ago, when all this starts happening, who's it happening to first? These young soccer players. And I would see this footage, and then I would tell people about it, and they'd be like, well, I don't know. And then I remember everybody was trying to cope by saying, well, you know, it's strenuous physical activity, and these things do occasionally happen. Hey, listen, I understand. Occasionally, a young person dies while partaking in a sport. That does happen, has always happened, but not at these kinds of levels. And yes, soccer was extraordinarily high right off the bat.
It's not like it just became a strenuous sport.
Right.
You know what I mean?
Good point.
It's not like anything's changed. This is how it is. But again, I think that the doctors would tell you that that's a sport where you're going to see it, because you just have this increased high level cardio going the whole time. It's 90 minutes. Well, you know, you get a little break in the middle, but essentially two 45 minute segments of you running, starting, stopping. It's very, you know, it's very taxing on the bodies. They monitor you like crazy now with EKGs and all of that. They can find out what your heart baseline level is. And I'm sure that they have that for all of these guys over the last two years that have dropped dead. They can certainly look at it, their baseline heart levels before, because they had to test them. They're not letting them on the field until they go through all these tests. So they're going to know the difference. If an investigation were to be conducted, it could actually probably be very insightful, simply because, like, if you and I maybe just fall over one day, you know, they go to your family and they say, well, when was the last time he had his blood work done? Or when was the last time, right, he talked to his doctor? I was like, well, he saw his doctor, but yeah, he put him on the treadmill. That was like, I don't know, 7 years ago we did that.
Yeah.
Okay. So it's apples and oranges then. But if you've got a guy that you're testing every single year and his heart rate is here and it's always the same and they're in peak physical health, and then the guy's 23 and falls over on the field and drops dead and is dead on the spot, that is abnormal. Like you said, could happen maybe once. But it's happening so much that they're making memes about it. You know, the guys that all are grabbing their heart and it says, I pledge allegiance to Pfizer, you know, and it's all of these guys that are, you know, just a collage of pictures of guys grabbing their hearts, like soccer players grabbing their hearts. So it's morbid and terrible, but we have to recognize this. We have to talk about it. And that's a place where you can actually see it, physically see what's going on.
Charlie, it's to the point now, and it's been this way for a while, as much as the people that are trying to villainize the rest of us for not having wanted to take the vaccination or being skeptical of all this, the cope is so hard that, I mean, here's the deal. When a famous person passes away right now, or an athlete, or someone gets suddenly ill, there's a coach right now who's, I mean, basically, let's admit it. We all, like, immediately, that's the place we first go to. It's like, were they vaccinated? So that's where we're at. And I'm not saying that all of these illnesses or deaths are a result of that, but that is, I think, in the minds of many now, all you have to do is go on social media. That is the first place. That's the first thing that people think.
Yeah. It's undeniable. There's something going on. And again, if it were just a regular old Monday afternoon and there's something going on, fine. But after what we've gone through for the last 2 years, when we were told, at basically held hostage and then told, you have to take this, you have to take this. And then, and it's experimental. It hasn't cleared stage three trials. It's technically gene therapy. It's only being used because it has the emergency use authorization. So there's all these contributing factors to why it's even available in the first place, but it is available and being not just sold, basically coerced onto people. This is the common, it's like, well, I wonder what happened to create a situation where all these people are dropping dead. It's like, well, I have an idea of something that might be a contributing factor to it. But it's interesting, and you can tell that you're onto it by the reaction of the media and big pharma and social media companies and everything. They reflexively tell you, you're not allowed to talk about that. It's a third rail topic. They'll shut you down. They'll kick you off your, and you go, well, wow. If I'm so out of my mind and I'm just coming up with crazy ideas that aren't anchored in any form of reality, then why the coordinated attack against anybody that's saying anything like this? You know, if I'm just so crazy talking about Elvis eating ding-dongs at the Winn-Dixie, then why won't you just let me keep talking and expose myself as being this lunatic that you think that I am? But of course, they don't want that. They just immediately shut the conversation down.
I speak with Charlie Robinson, and I'm just picturing Elvis eating ding-dongs at the Winn-Dixie. You guys, we're going to take a break. When we come back, I am going to ask Charlie about his thoughts of the accidental leak at Wuhan. I just spoke, you know, in the first hour with Dr. Andrew Huff, who says that he believes it was an accidental leak. But we'll get Charlie's take on the other side. This is TNT's Deprogram. We'll be right back.
Of all the hate-filled, double-fisted middle fingers the Biden administration has flipped to patriotic Americans everywhere, perhaps none is as egregious as today's release of notorious arms dealer Victor Bout, best known as the Merchant of Death, for pot-smoking, dope-vaping WNBA player Brittany Griner, leaving Marine Paul Whelan hung out to dry. And in typical Biden administration fashion, they lied about whether they chose Griner over Whelan. Even the NBC News original report indicates as such. Their choice was either Griner or Whelan or none, reported NBC News. And then they went back and edited it to their choice was either Griner or no one. No, they chose the dope-smoking basketball player over the Marine. Somebody got smoked in this deal. And it wasn't Russia. All we want to know, was Brittany in a men's prison or a woman's prison? From MAGAInstitute.com, this is Timothy Shea for TNT Radio.
Challenging the consensus and debunking the narrative. This is Viewpoint.
In fiscal year 2019, 2,800 pounds of fentanyl was seized at the US-Mexico border. The following year, 4,800 pounds was seized, and in fiscal year 2021, seizures totaled 11,200 pounds. The figures indicate fentanyl seizures under Biden quadrupled since fiscal year 2019, when Trump was in office. Fentanyl is primarily flown from China to Mexico before the Mexican cartels traffic it across the southern border. Only a fraction of fentanyl trafficked across the border is seized by Department of Homeland Security. The Center for Disease Control, CDC, reported that more than 100,000 Americans died from drug overdoses in the past 12 months, and two-thirds of those deaths were linked to fentanyl.
This is TNT Radio, where you meet the entire menagerie of mankind
and some who haven't yet been cataloged.
Today's News Talk Radio, TNT.
Charlie Robinson of Macroaggressions is my guest this hour. And Charlie, in the first hour, I had Dr. Andrew Huff on, and he's, you know, he's doing all the media this week. His book is How I Uncovered the Biggest Lie in History. And it's the Truth About Wuhan is the actual title, and then with the byline. And he says, you know, he was a senior scientist there and a VP. And he says that he does believe that it was an accidental leak. Of course, we did pay for it. You know, the U.S. government funded this thing. But what say you? Do you think it was an accidental leak?
Well, I think there can be multiple things happening at the same time. Now, Wuhan is working on this virus, right? So they've got it in this, you know, high-level secured building. It's been sent to them. There's a bunch. It's undeniable at this point. There's a bunch of emails that go back over the years, and we know this. This is what they were working on. Now, the real question is, it must have gotten out of there. So, the assumption is, okay, so it was made there. So it got out of there somehow. It either got out of there on accident or it got out of there on purpose, right? Those are your two sort of scenarios. But I would offer a third scenario, which takes us back to where we started with the tabletop exercises in Clade X.
Yep.
In this fictional scenario called Clade X that was conducted in 2018, they talked about this terrorist group releasing a bioweapon similar to COVID, right? It wasn't exactly like it, but it was very similar. And the way in which they went about releasing it was they left and opened canisters of this in a variety of cities across the world. And that's where everything broke out. Now, you and I have talked about tabletop exercises. We talked about the possibility that we have the Wuhan military games happening earlier in the year. And that is a great, you want to talk about a super spreader event. It's similar to the Olympics in that you can drop off a poison in one place and then it just gets sent back everywhere, right? It gets spread. And that is certainly something. Now, I'll take it a step further. The citizens in Wuhan, there were a few of them that were interviewed, and they asked him about that Wuhan games, the military games. And they said, "Do you notice anything weird about that?" They said, "Yeah, actually, we did. They told us on the media that there's going to be the Wuhan games, but they didn't want us to really mingle with those people too much. They said it would be best if we just sort of let them have their games and we stayed away from them and maybe even stayed inside." And we thought that was very unusual, but didn't really think much of it. You know, obviously in their government or in culture, it's sort of like, we're going to tell you what the rules are and this is what you do. And so do it. So they, I guess to the extent that they could, maybe they listened to the rules, but it was interesting that the rules were, don't go there. Don't go over there. You know, if you see those military games and you're thinking, "Oh, I might want to go," don't do that. And that they found that to be very strange. So look, I think that you can have the Wuhan laboratory as the smoking gun, but the actual spreading of it happened the way it was described in Clade X with canisters in various places, maybe just in Wuhan. Maybe everywhere for all we know. But again, they came up with that scenario, not me. This is Johns Hopkins inventing these crazy conspiracy theories about how these eco-terrorists, you know, it's funny though, in that Clade X scenario, the thing that these terrorists were about was they're rabidly of the belief that there's too many people on the planet and they want to depopulate everyone. And I was like, oh my God, like, get these people a mirror. You know, are you kidding me? They talk about projection. Holy moly. So I found that interesting.
It is. And when I read that, I'm like, you know, if I were a therapist, you know, go right. on.
Paging Dr. Freud.
Yeah. The thing that's interesting to me, I like you, I think that several different things could be going on. And Dr. Andrew Huff, I have to take him at his word, although I know people that don't believe him. They think that, you know, that he probably knows more than he's saying, and he doesn't actually think that this was an accident. I don't know that. He told me that he firmly believes it, so we're on record on the show. That's what the man said. However, you bring up the military games, and now we've got this situation with a couple of people getting sick at this World Cup thing. So and we find out that there was a yet another tabletop exercise. I'm not trying to be a doomsayer. I'm just like, it looks like we've been through a lot of this before, and I hope that nothing is in the pipeline for us. I hope that both of these journalists, it turns out to just be, you know, ill health or just some kind of natural cause and not a prelude to something worse. And do you remember at the beginning of COVID, there were some stories, there was a P4 lab in Canada and a Chinese couple with some students were extradited back to China. Do you remember this for stealing some samples? They never told us what it was. So we don't really know what it was. And then there was a was he from Yale? Then there was a Yale scientist who I believe was also working with a Chinese company. And he gets busted for, I think, also selling some samples or something. So, you know, there's the accidents, there's the potential of an intentional leak, and then there's some people that might just be actually trading in these types of substances or specimens on the black market as well.
Sure. And I'm not saying that it couldn't have been an accidental leak. I just think that when you have things like Event 201 that plan on the outbreak of a novel coronavirus that spreads from markets to airports to all over the world and is only stopped by a vaccine after it kills 65 million people. When you role play something like that, and then you hand out to the participants stuffed plushies that are of coronaviruses, and then 6 months later, the thing happens the way you planned it or the way you simulated it, it's hard to not think that it was intentional. You know, it's hard. Right. I have a harder time saying about the Wuhan lab theory that it was unintentional. Now, maybe as far as he knows, it was unintentional. But what a coincidence, though, right? That it happened exactly the way that it's, you know, I mean, the minor modification between Event 201 and reality was that in Event 201, they said it started in Brazil, markets there in Brazil, and then went to China and then went everywhere. So they took one step out of it. But still, I think that if there wasn't so much advanced knowledge and so many previous instances of these people having tabletop exercises and then them going live almost identically to how they were planned, I think that if you didn't have three or four or five of these different events that you could pull from, it'd be easier for me to say, well, maybe it was just an accident. But my little conspiratorial mind gets going and I start seeing these things and I start thinking they were meant to happen, because look what has come in the wake of this. And it's undeniable that there was advanced knowledge of this. Okay. Undeniable that many people knew that this was coming. So again, if it's an accidental leak, how come everybody knew the accident was going to happen?
I basically asked Dr. Huff at the end of that, I was like, if it was in fact an accident, what do you say about the comparisons to Event 201? And he said that he was, he did think that was super fishy. And then today I see on Twitter, it was trending just a minute ago, catastrophic contagion, which is the name of this recent tabletop exercise. So it's out there. People now know about this. I don't know if it bothers John Hopkins and Melinda Gates. I doubt it does very much. I don't think they probably care. But this isn't something that is just the realm of the wild and crazy conspiracy folk like us anymore.
No, it is not. And they say in this new catastrophic contagion that, quote, the World Health Organization needs to be a voice for the voiceless.
Okay.
No, thank you.
Yeah, no, thank you. And yeah, I don't know. It makes me very uncomfortable, but that they're continuing to do this. It feels a little bit arrogant. But back to Wuhan, you know, maybe it was an accident. I don't think it was, but I would love to find out that it was. It would make me feel a little better about human nature, but I don't think that's the case. And I don't think it would stop them from doing it. Oh, another thing I found out from speaking with him is that these labs, not just the Wuhan labs, but he said there were these types of labs in at least 30 different countries.
Oh, wow. I didn't know that. I wouldn't be surprised. I know that I know Ukraine has plenty of labs. That's got to be a problem. And of course, the majority of vaccines are made in India and a few of them in China as well. So my guess is that they probably have labs in India as well. And that's just a guess on my part, but I wouldn't be surprised if there were maybe a few more of these. I know Fort Detrick has had a problem with that. I know there's also a U.S. lab in Galveston that has sort of these bioweapons as well. So keep your eyes on that. If anything goes wonky in Galveston, you'll know why.
Wow, I did not know that one. You guys, hey, we're coming up on the end of the hour. Charlie Robinson, tell everybody again where they can find your work. I love having you on, man. I enjoy these conversations.
Oh, thank you so much, Michael. I appreciate it. You can find me. I put out a show called Macroaggressions. It goes out twice a week as an audio podcast. You can find it in video format as well on Rockfin, Odyssey, Band.video, and Vigilante macroaggression.tv. And you can follow me on Twitter at macroaggression or go to my website, the octopusofglobalcontrol.com. You can find out about the books I've written and so forth. Thanks for having me again. Appreciate it.
Well, I thoroughly enjoyed it. So what's going to be the next episode of the podcast? You know what your topic is yet?
I've got a blank sheet of paper in front of me with the words catastrophic contagion at the top. Does that give you any ideas? Imagine
that. All right. Well, now's the time. Ladies and gentlemen, we're going to roll. I hear the music. It's not Ozzy this time, but it's some kind of stock library music. Charlie Robinson, thank you so much, you guys. Thank you to my producers, Dave and Alex. Thank you to TNT for hosting. Thank you to all of you for listening. And we'll be back here, same bat channel, no pun intended, or maybe so, tomorrow. Peace.